The weekend is near and the next round of footy is finally upon us. And your ultimate guide to all the upcoming action lies within the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker. Welcome to Match Committee.
Since 2000, only one coach had been removed prior to round 10. But this season, we've already had two departures prior to round 11. And the most recent exit was quintessentially Carlton. Big loss, long stakeout, and a sensational press conference. We'll discuss the Blues mess, Brendan Bolton, the possible replacements, and a lot more in the Fox Footy podcast. We will also be joined straight off the plane by Triple Premiership line Alistair Lynch, who saw the Shanghai shellacking live in China. Hello and welcome to the program. Ben Waterworth with you, as is foxfooty.com.au's chief departed coaches correspondent, Max Lawton. Hello, Max.
I've taken Tom's role, have I?
Oh, essentially.
Which is very interesting.
You've just been on the shift, essentially, when both coaches have gone down this year.
You're not suggesting it's my fault, are you? I would say since I've last been on this podcast, two coaches have been sacked.
This is so very true.
Mark Brasher was actually calling me, begging me to be on this week, so no more coaches lost their jobs.
Also joining us is aspiring TMZ cameraman Tom Morris.
That was an interesting little few minutes, wasn't it, yesterday, Ben?
Yes, it was. So, because you were staking out at Icon Park yesterday and decided to get all TMZ on
us. I'll go back a step further than that.
Yes.
I wasn't going to go down to Icon Park yesterday. I thought something might be up. But then Kane Little walked in, the CEO, and effectively said, we'll have an update for you later today to other journalists. And I thought to myself, there's something up here. And then I spoke to a couple of people and I thought, this is actually happening. Bolton's going to be sacked today.
What could an update possibly be?
Yeah.
You're not updating, he's still the coach.
It differed from his previous messages of Brendan Bolton's our coach and we're happy and there's no issue and everything's fine, everything's on track. Although they did say that yesterday. And then what happened to these media stakeouts is effectively the media divides itself up. So you had some Fox Sports cameras at the front entrance. You had Channel 10 and Rob Waters, I think, ran the side.
Yep.
You had Channel 9 and ABC somewhere else. And in fact, ABC was where I was. But I'm there with my phone. I'm not really looking. I'm just looking around to see what's up. And then before I know it, a car drives in. And a guy with a bald head and a beard is driving the car. And the ABC journalist says to me, who's that? And I thought, geez, it could be Juddy. I don't know. It could be Juddy. Anyway, and we keep looking at the car, and the car goes in the gate, and they're shooting, the ABC camera is shooting, and Tom Petroro gets out of the car.
Yes, manager of Brendan Bolton.
Thanks, Ben.
Thank you.
Tom Petroro gets out of the car, and he's bald with a beard, so it's obviously him, not Juddy. And out of the passenger seat is Brendan Bolton, and the camera starts rolling. Now, the video that I posted on Twitter makes it look like I'm in a bush.
Yes.
I'm actually shooting alongside the Channel 9 and ABC cameras. It's just more amateurish because it's on an iPhone and I'm not tall enough to hold it above the bushes that are 10 metres in front of me.
Well, also, I don't know if you've noticed, but Brendan Bolton isn't the tallest man either.
He's not. He'd arrived at the club. That was all it was.
It's notable. It's newsworthy.
Well, it's newsworthy because he arrived with his manager on a Monday.
Yes.
And from that moment forth, it was 100% happening, I thought. As soon as he arrived with his manager on a Monday, it is 100% happening.
Well, you could almost say that you saw this happening on Sunday night as well. You sent out a tweet. You almost got the ball rolling.
Well, let's be honest, Tom. You drove this 100% you because you hate Carlton, right?
I thought
I hated Carlton, but you,
I actually don't mind Carlton. And anyone that says that I hate... There's people that have tweeted me, among the many people that have tweeted me with various levels of abuse, saying, I don't listen to the Fox Footy podcast anymore because you hate Carlton.
They were listening at the start of the season when I was getting attacked by them.
I don't hate Carlton at all. I don't think they're a very good footy team. I don't think they're a bad club. I don't hate the people there. I like their leadership. I like their young kids. I think they've got a far better culture than they did 4 or 5 years ago. I think their biggest mistake of the last decade is actually appointing Mick Malthouse, not sacking Brett Ratton and not sacking Brendan Bolton. I think appointing Mick Malthouse was their huge mistake. They went for the Messiah again and it turned out to be a terrible mistake. But these people tweeting me saying you hate Carlton, for the record, I don't hate Carlton. Yeah, I quite like Carlton.
There is a confusion that comes when you criticise a club that therefore you must hate them.
Because these people are emotional about their own club.
Yeah,
So they assume that my opinion is an emotion-driven one. It is absolutely not an emotion-driven one. I've got nothing against Carlton. I do against some other clubs, but not Carlton.
So you were talking about mistakes then, Thomas. Maxie, was it a mistake to sack Brendan Bolton on Monday by the Blues?
I believe it was.
Oh!
So I believe that Carlton's been making some mistakes for a while now. I think that's apparent by their 1-10 record. But I think sacking Bolton and therefore blaming him for their current problems is just the latest of them. Because watching that press conference, and I was live tweeting it for the Fox Footy account, and they had plenty to say, so I had plenty of work to do. But Mark Le Goudache is probably maybe the most notable performer from that, because not a lot of people who are fans of his work.
He was poor.
He was poor from what he said there. And he said about how that Carlton has a plan and the entire club is bought into the plan and we're still on the plan and the plan's going well, but that doesn't mean you can't make changes. There was a bit of inconsistency in all of that for a start, but essentially he was saying, oh yeah, no, we're fine. This is what we expected to be, but also we've lost too many games and therefore we have to sack Bolts. I don't understand the core premise of why the win-loss record for Carlton matters right now if they're rebuilding. If you look at that team right now, why does it matter if they're 1-10 compared to 3-8, which they could very easily be? If they had 1 second longer in that game against Hawthorn, they probably beat them. If they had a little bit longer in that game against Gold Coast, they probably beat them. Two games under a goal.
Yep.
They could very easily be 3-8. Bolton is not getting sacked right now if they're 3-8.
Yep.
So did Bolton deserve to be sacked because of those performances, or did he deserve to be sacked because of the last two losses? They've had some bad losses this year. The last 2 weeks were pretty bad, but they also challenged Collingwood very recently. They beat the Western Bulldogs very recently. They've had some good games this year as well. So I don't understand what has changed for all of a sudden Bolton to need to go.
Get the feeling you're not quite in agreement.
No, I'm not quite in agreement, but I'm not completely in disagreement in terms of Le Goudache. I think Carlton's got it half right in getting rid of Brennan Bolton.
Right.
But I think Le Goudache should also go. I don't see how Le Goudache's job is tenable.
And to be honest, I agree with that.
As a board member since 2010, he's overseen now three coaches being sacked. He's overseen two coaches being sacked as the president. And he's a big part of the role of a president is to be strong in a PR sense, to be a strong talker and a salesman for the club and a real source of hope for supporters. And they have 61,700 members, Carlton, according to their website. That is a lot of people that I think would be disappointed in the president at the moment. So that's one thing. I agree with you there.
Mm.
I disagree with Max in that you are right. If they're 3-8 right now, then Brennan Bolton probably isn't sacked now. But I still think he's sacked at the end of the year. So it might happen in 2 weeks' time. It might happen in 6 weeks' time. But he's still not there at the end of the year if they're on track to be 3-8 now and maybe, let's say, win 5 at the end of
the
year. So if you're going to do it, you may as well do it now. The second thing I want to say is football is littered with examples of ifs and should-haves. Or if this happened, then they could have done this. And if this ball bounced this way, this could have won. Stephen Milne could be a premiership player if the ball bounced this way. So there's always examples, and you can go through probably two or three games a weekend where it's so tight and things could have gone another way and it could have affected results down the track. Mm. The reality is Brennan Bolton didn't just coach a team that was 1-10. He coached a team that was, and this stat that's been used a lot, 4-43.
4-39.
4-39, sorry. Yeah, 4 from 43. Yeah. And as you pointed out on your Twitter, 20.77% as a coach of Carlton. Now, my view is that ratio doesn't save any coach in any sport anywhere around the world.
It's appalling.
And I don't care if you want to call it a rebuild or a regeneration or how young your list is initially. If you win two games in your third year and one game to the halfway point in your fourth year, then you are in a whole lot of trouble. And I keep going back to that. I think Bolton was unlucky in some respects. I think he's a really decent guy with great passion and emotion, and he cares a lot, and he puts in a lot of work. But ultimately, as I said yesterday, there is a win-loss threshold. My personal view was he should have gone at the end of last year. I think if a team wins two games in your third year, that is it. I don't care what
else
happened.
That was supposed to be the bottom of the
bottom
for Carlton.
That's how they sold it. It is your third year as coach and you won two games. And you look at the history of all sports around the world, and I don't like using American sports or English sports too much because it's a different landscape, privately owned clubs, etc. And Carlton is in some ways privately owned, as I think Mark Robinson was saying last night. But in your third year as coach to win two games is unacceptable. And I think the writing was on the wall once they'd won one to now.
And I'm not going to say that Bolton's been the perfect coach. Clearly he hasn't. I think he's probably been a below average coach over the past few years. He's had some questionable decisions playing Jacob Wietering forward for a while and a few other things.
Yeah,
he's
yeah.
Done some
and there's been others that have done things wrong as well. I think Stephen Silvani's got to be under the pump.
So, but that's more to my point. I think the problems that Carlton has right now are to do with A, the way they've sold the rebuild, and B, the way they've gone about the rebuild.
Yeah.
So look at how much they've actually done. 56 list changes in 4 years. It's incredible. And
imagine lining all those players up.
It's a big turnover.
55 different players have come in over the last 4 years via signings, rookies, trades, drafting.
Mid-season draft.
It's an incredible amount of players who have and that. So that's maybe that's how you get to 56, actually, is that mid-season draft player. So, and then you look at the team they put out on the weekend. It was their youngest team under Bolton.
Yeah.
Do you know who the eighth most experienced player was in that game?
Eighth most experienced.
Darcy Lang.
Darcy Lang, former Geelong superstar.
Who missed two crucial goals as well.
Which didn't help, obviously. Look, so I'm not saying Darcy Lang is entirely the problem. I think that's a bit emblematic of what's going on there, that he is one of the most experienced players in that list. They are still rebuilding. They have not sold it as such, and I don't even think they're planning as such, because strategically, they went into last year's draft and said, we don't need to go to the draft anymore, which is why they traded their first round pick away this year in the Liam Stocker deal. They are getting a pick back, so they are going to get two probably top 12 players. But my question is whether that was the right move, and I said at the time it wasn't.
There's some misinformation about what I wrote on Sunday night. Mm. Brendan Bolton was not the only problem.
No.
There's a myriad of problems at this club, and they're all sort of intertwining and interconnected. And it takes a much stronger president than Mark Lagudashay and a very good head of football. Hopefully Brad Lloyd is that man and Kane Little is the CEO to fix these issues. No one can put a finger on any one person and blame any one person, but just like Mark Neild had to leave Melbourne in order to have a fresh start, that I think Brendan Bolton had to leave Carlton to have a fresh start.
It's a bit of a Brad Scott sort of
situation. A little bit. Yeah. The second thing I think that's important here, and you mentioned it briefly just then, is Carlton's team was the youngest it's been across 4 years on the weekend. A week before that, Kane Little told Brendan Bolton that the win-loss ratio matters. So for Brendan Bolton to then go out and select the youngest team he ever has, despite knowing in the back of his head all of a sudden losing could have dire consequences, says something about Brendan Bolton.
That he's still coaching for the future.
Exactly.
He's not coaching for his
own
job.
And he did not see this coming.
So I have a huge problem with the fact that suddenly when you're 4 from 42 wins, now the win-loss record matters, and a week later he's gone.
I've got a huge problem with that as well.
That's horrible decision-making, isn't it?
Do you think Brendan Bolton would have if you were the president, would you be assuring Brendan Bolton would coach next year?
I would be, but I have a lot more patience in this sort of matter than anyone at Carlton does, clearly. And understandably, because they're looking at the financials.
Not just Carlton, but supporters and experts around the league as well.
I think a lot of Kane Little's decision-making has been around looking at the business side of things. He's having to continually sell Carlton to the business community and trying to get money in and get in members with what's going on. And it's understandably depressing when you're trying to do that.
So who's your ideal man for 2020 for Carlton?
It was a tipping point on Sunday as well, wasn't it?
It was a tipping point.
I don't think it's Brad Scott. I mean, the ideal man is Alistair Clarkson. I don't think it's going to be him.
No.
I don't think it's going to be John Longmire. No. I think Ross Lyon would be amazing.
There's a lot of whispers about Ross to Carlton.
But yeah, because he's close friends with Stephen Silvani. Yeah. But honestly, I'd be surprised if Stephen Silvani was there next year. And I think he would leave on his own volition, on his own choice. And they'll just sell it as Stephen Silvani doesn't want to affect his sons. He's got both his sons at the club.
Yeah.
Doesn't want to be around with his sons anymore. Because as much as they try to paint that as a non-issue, it is absolutely an issue at Carlton.
Right, okay.
It's an issue at Carlton because neither of his son,
has been for a while?
Yeah, it has been for a while. And it's not a fierce issue. But Jack Silvani isn't exactly concrete set in the team.
No.
And the younger Silvani is still coming through himself as well.
Just a kid.
And there's another one coming through as well, isn't there?
There is, yes.
Yeah. So I think Stephen Silvani would get a job elsewhere. But I think without any inside knowledge, I think he would want to leave at the end of the year and make a fresh start elsewhere.
I think the type of coach they need next depends on where they actually think they are.
Mm. But what is a type of coach?
So you can have two things. You can bring in an experienced coach. You can bring in a Brad Scott. If you think that over the next 3 years, you'll be pushing towards finals. If they think they'll be in the finals in 2021 or 2022, Brad Scott's the perfect coach.
Is he?
He's the experienced man. He has gotten teams to overperform before. North Melbourne making two prelims.
Yeah.
What they had was overperforming, even if he didn't have any other success.
I think you know what you're going to get with Brad Scott, and I think it's a safe move to say, we're going to get you. And a decade is a long time for Brad Scott to have a sample size of coaching form. I think Brad Scott's the wrong man. I don't think Brad Scott should be coaching Carlton.
Are you saying that based on where you think Carlton are at, or where you think what he brings to the club? Or
the latter.
Okay.
The latter. I'm picking the best available candidate, and that could easily be an untried senior coach.
I think he might be the best available candidate if the candidates are Scott or assistant coach. Because they are still at a point where they need to keep building.
But the more I think about Brad Scott, and my opinion has evolved over the last 2 weeks since he left North Melbourne, the more I think he should absolutely not automatically walk into a club.
I think him taking a year off could be best for him.
And that's right.
And I could see him doing that.
And that's what I think he should do.
Yeah.
And
be great in the media if he did that.
Yeah,
he
would
well.
Be great in the media.
Gosh. He was really good on 360 in his sort of exit interview.
And all them. So just back to you, you said safe just beforehand. Did Carlton do the safe pick by selecting Sam Walsh to pick one in the draft in 2018?
Kane Corns' view.
Yes, Kane Corns' view, saying in hindsight they should have picked Connor Rosie.
Well, if it's safe to pick a superstar who's a potential Brownlow medalist, then I guess they did. Mm. But I've got no issue with safe in this regard. I think Sam Walsh is a superstar.
Yeah. So the argument there is that he's not a game breaker because of his physical traits?
He can be a game breaker, Sam Walsh. Yeah. Okay. He's going to be breaking lines and, you know, coming up with big goals. He's going to be a player that could be a captain of the club, and he'll inspire his teammates.
I would trust your draft views on that sort of thing.
Is that the coaching discussion done? You got more.
So the idea of bringing an assistant coach to me doesn't make sense because they need to keep going to the draft. They've said they don't want to, but they need to. Yeah. Because you look at teams that have gone to the draft. Melbourne essentially did it for a decade, right? And it finally worked in 2014 and 2015 with Petrarca, Brayshaw, Oliver. And then they started to improve, and Carlton would kill for a Melbourne of 2018 season right now, wouldn't they?
They would.
Brisbane picked in the top eight every year from 2010 onwards, and when they didn't actually pick, they were trading those picks for a Beams, a Neil, a pick 12 for Charlie Cameron, you know, stars. So that actually makes a lot of sense. Carlton the last decade, 2008 to 2015, they didn't use a top 10 pick. They had one, they traded it for Mark Wiley, Christian Jaksch, and Blaine Bocoast.
Yes. Jeez, that hurts.
Not great use there. 15, Jacob Wiedering. I think he's had quite an improved season.
Yeah.
I think he's still going to be an above-average defender.
I'm a fan.
And Harry Mackay, Charlie Curnow, they've shown something over the last 2 years. They can be good key cogs. 2016 is not looking good right now. Petrescu Seaton showed bits and pieces earlier this year. Mm. I'm worried about
it's
what
flashy,
impact
yep.
he's going to have. Paddy Dow already, to me, looks limited as a player.
Well, for a high draft pick, he does.
Pick three. Wasn't
yeah. He was pick yeah, pick three. Pick
so
three.
He
want a superstar with pick three.
You look at what you average get. What you get on average from pick one, pick two, pick three, and this is why I had a problem with them trading what may end up being pick one in the 2019 draft. On average, you get 250 games out of pick one.
Yeah.
Pick two and pick three, you get an average 200 games. Below that, in the top 10, you're getting closer to 100.
Yep.
There is a big drop off. And you can miss. There are obviously some very famous misses, but you have to just keep taking chances. I don't think they've had enough chances.
Well, you've got to stockpile them, don't you?
You need to stockpile them. And then when you can see in recent years you haven't hit, you need to keep trying to hit until you do. So you need to keep going for those stars. That's what Melbourne did, and eventually it has paid off.
Is there any risk, though, that if they keep on stockpiling these first-round draft picks and the picks that have been at those top picks that have been at the club for three to five years now, is there any risk that they lose patience, that other clubs see potential in them and they jump ship?
I'm sure that happens, but when you mess up in the draft, that's what happens. You have to just keep going. Yeah. I'm not saying go for another 5 years. Go for one or two. Take this pick one because we thought they were going to be terrible this year. We thought they were going to have a top three pick this year. Do one more. Don't go now. This wasn't the right time to go and say, we can climb up the ladder. It did not look like it.
The problem is, probably alongside Essendon, there's no club that is as impatient as Carlton.
Mm.
Impatience
gets you nowhere.
But they've done so well to be patient. And now, by trading away their first pick this year, they're almost back to the old Carlton.
Yes.
And it was a mistake. It's not Liam Stocker's fault. You can say what you want about Liam Stocker.
He could be a very good player.
Yeah, but fair dinkum, they were never going to finish outside the bottom four this year.
Yep.
And Adelaide are laughing all the way to the draft.
Yep, they'll be laughing, no doubt about that. One of my favourite Twitter accounts at the moment is the weekly update of the Carlton Adelaide pick swap at the end of the year. That'll be one to follow.
Which I'm not running. Yes. No, before you ask,
was there speculation that you're running it?
I have been asked if I run that account. Actually.
And why is David Teague not in the mix to be the next Carlton coach? If he coaches them to 4 or 5 wins in the back half of the year, why is he not the right man?
If he coaches them to 4 or 5 wins, he's a miracle worker.
And I suppose the Reece Shaw narrative after just one win, like he suddenly put himself out there. There's been an interesting note about David Teague. A lot of criticism about the Blues this season has been about the forward group and the structure and how it's worked. Mm. And he's the forwards coach and now has got full control of, well, the overarching control
it's gonna be very
of
interesting.
The team.
It's about the connection as well, though.
Yeah.
And let's not forget David Teague was the forwards coach at Adelaide when they had the best forward line
yes,
in the competition.
Very true.
So
very
it's
true.
About the it's about the cattle you have, yeah. I think, more than anything else. And for a forward line to work, it relies on a midfield that's delivering the ball well, too. And for whatever reason, Carlton have struggled at this for for a long, long time.
It is about the cattle, but you looked at what they talked about on the couch last week.
Yeah.
With playing, trying to get too many talls. They're not playing up the line. They're not playing in right positions when they're trying to move the ball forward. Cripps having no one to kick to. Stuff like that. That was structural stuff. That was coaching stuff.
Mm. Was it Brennan Bolton coaching or forward line coaching stuff?
Well, I'm not going to know that, am
no.
I?
No. Yeah, I wonder.
Well, we've just talked about some potential coaching replacements. Let's get the opinion of our special guest for the podcast today. He was over in Shanghai on the ground, keeping a close eye on everything Port Adelaide and St Kilda for the third edition of that contest. And of course, his Mighty Lions are going mighty fine as well. Let's welcome Triple Premiership Lion Alistair Lynch to the Fox Footy Podcast. Ni hao, Alistair.
Ni hao. How are you?
Oh, we're great.
Share. That's about all I've got, I reckon.
Oh, it's probably better than most people as well. Just so you got back on Monday as well. Just your first time over for the game, and Fox has done it for the past couple of years. What was your takeaway from the whole Shanghai experience?
I thought, well, to start with, it was a great cultural experience. I hadn't been to China before, and thought it was just outstanding. Massive city, obviously Shanghai, 26 million people in the same sort of area, or a bit smaller than Melbourne, so very dense population. And a beautiful city, and so that part of it was great. And I was actually pleasantly surprised about the football over there, and how, you know, many supporters from both clubs, St Kilda and Port Adelaide, had ventured over. And the facility was very good. The surface was outstanding. So probably just didn't get the game that we would have liked. Mm. But I think there's some valid reasons around that, with the illness to the St Kilda players and coaching staff as well.
Lynchy, can you confirm or deny issues with the buses getting to the stadium? 26 million people, I can understand there being some congestion in Shanghai, but not going to the wrong footy ground.
Yeah, no, I can confirm that. And I was probably operating a bit too much in your space, and I was doing a bit of a newsy stuff at half time, and I'd heard. So Shanghai Cred is the company that underwrites the whole project for Port Adelaide and the AFL, basically, and they had 400. I think they were more staff of their company, and they were on a bus, and or it was a number of buses, and I don't know whether they actually got there, but I know at half time they were still on the way. They went to the wrong stadium in Shanghai, and which is quite extraordinary, because they were all based in the city, but they went to the wrong stadium, so they may have missed it. They certainly missed the first half, but that was quite incredible. But and on that, you think 26 million people, the congestion would be ridiculous. Well, actually, it's not. It flows pretty well, and I mean the run in from the airport, which is, you know, probably about 50 minutes drive, essentially, it's a raised freeway flat out right into the city. So it's pretty easy driving around, and the metro or the subway is incredible as well. But there was certainly 400 supporters missing.
Lynchy, I'm really enjoying your new news breaking style. Yes. And I know you've made a late career switch to cricket, maybe a late career switch to news breaking as well could be your go. Serious question about China. You've been over there now for this game. Does it work? Is it a viable option for the future?
Well, so my take on this, is, as far as over there, I mean, realistically, the Chinese have got no idea about AFL football. I don't think they're really going to support it. I look at Port Adelaide, and what was it, 6 or 7 years ago, when they had tarps draped over the footy park stadium because of the lack of crowds. I think the modern football club, outside the superpowers, have to think about other ways they can build a financial structure to actually support them. They have $50, $60 million business being sustainable. I think what Port Adelaide are doing, they're tapping into an enormous resource in China if they can get into it. Now, with having the company or the corporation, Shanghai Cred, as an underwriter, is a massive start in the right direction. And I think clubs need to look at this type of thing. So I'm all for it. I think they've broken the mold as far as how to run a footy club. And I like the fact that they're having a crack at this, because for Port Adelaide, and I believe for clubs like Brisbane and the Gold Coast, to go the membership model, although that's a component, it's not sustainable in some of these sort of non-AFL areas.
But Lynchy, for the other side of the coin for St Kilda, they're essentially selling a home game. They're having Port play Never Tear Us Apart before their own home game, which was very bizarre. And a number of Saints figures commented on that from back home. And this is a team that was 5-5 going into this game, theoretically in the finals race. Has their captain get injured? Has players get sick? Does it worry you at all that a team has to be in a position that where they would sell a game like this and essentially give up a real chance of winning, which they could have won if this was at Marvel, you would have thought?
Yeah, and I see that side of things, and I agree. I mean, it's disappointing. We've seen clubs, you know, sell games to Darwin, Alice Springs, Townsville, Cairns, all over the place, and even go back to my Fitzroy days. We were selling games to Hobart. It is a massive. Well, we've got another story about that too. When we got billeted out, that wasn't great. It's a reality, and that's why I was saying it's a good move from Port Adelaide to have a crack at this, because clubs have to find a different avenue to bring money in. And St Kilda, to have to sell a game, it's a reality of their financial position. But they can tap into these resources as well as far as the sponsors are concerned. And to see the head table at the gala dinner the night before the game, the amount of money, the wealth that is on that table is quite staggering. It's just a different level to what we know in Australia. And I think St Kilda will have their opportunities to tap into that as well.
Very interesting. I like Lynch's take, Benny.
Yeah.
I want to ask you about the Brisbane Lions, Lynch. You're up there. You see it firsthand all the time. You're very close to the club, clearly, still, and rightly so. There's an article on foxfooty.com.au at the moment suggesting from Jared Healy that David Noble should be in contention for Carlton's senior coaching job, in a similar vein to the way Chris Fagan was appointed at the Brisbane Lions, as sort of a senior manager, overseer of the organisation. What are your thoughts on David Noble as a potential senior coach from the position he's in at the moment?
Well, I think he's an outstanding football person. And I think when we looked at the Fagan and Noble package, either one could have played the other role. I mean, could have seen David Noble coaching and Chris Fagan being his support. He's certainly a candidate, I would have thought. Well, geez, don't want to lose him from Brisbane's point of view.
But
what I think is really important, when you're picking any sort of coach, you actually need to give him the resources as well. And this is not taking anything away from who Carlton have there at the moment, but if you're going to bring in let's say it's a Chris Fagan, you need to give him some support with a David Noble type. So I think it would be the same thing. If David Noble was to go into that space, again, bring him a very experienced football manager that's all over the coaching side of things, that can be a strong ally. And because especially in a club like Carlton, which has got some big personalities, some influential people, you're going to have to resource and support the coach to the hilt so he can get through that transitional period to get Carlton back up and going. So, yeah, I mean, he's a candidate. He wouldn't be the first one I'd go to because he's so good at what he's doing now. And he's probably, maybe he's even shelved the coaching ambition.
But so had Chris Fagan, didn't he? Person. Chris Fagan had shelved it.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think when you're looking at who's going to be your next coach, you have to speak to everyone that you think's a good candidate. And I'd be knocking on David Noble's door as well, and even to tap into his thoughts from the experience of coming up here with Chris Fagan. If he's not interested, you know, what does he suggest? What are his thoughts on how to bring in a new coach, someone in the mould of Fagan?
Lynchy, just one more before we let you go. I'm sure you would have been watching or watch AFL, the overseas product that Fox produces, watching the Brisbane Lions and the Hawks are at least caught up on the result and another victory for the Lions, which has them just one game outside the top four. Gary Lyons said on the couch last night, or sort of hinted, why not for this Brisbane Lions side? Why can't the fairy tale happen? Why can't they push for a top four position? I suppose they've teased us a little bit in the last couple of months. They've had a couple of close losses away from home, and if they would have picked some of those up, we probably would have been a little bit more, convinced about the Lions. Where do you sort of see them? We've officially hit the halfway mark. Where do you sort of see the Lions as they head towards the back half of the season?
Well, they're slightly more advanced than I thought they'd be. I thought there was another step before playing finals, so I thought it was a realistic target to get between 8 and 12 wins. But now that should be readjusted. They can certainly play finals football, and they'd be disappointed if they didn't play finals from this position. I think what we see more and more in modern AFL football, certainly over the last 3 years, you legitimately have a 22-round qualifying period. And what you need to do is you need to qualify your team in the best shape possible and then have a good month. I mean, I think in previous years before the last three, you've got your superpowers that are standouts, you know, and you go look at Hawthorn, Geelong, Sydney, these superpower clubs that basically are going to battle it out. I think we've got a massive teams that, if qualified, they get the final series right, they can go on and win it. And Brisbane have got to be in that discussion. They're not at the elite, probably, of Geelong, Collingwood, but I think they've proven that on their day, their best is more than competitive. So yeah, that'd be their ambitions should be to make finals, although it wouldn't be discussed internally, that's for sure.
Well, triple premiership line, and now a Shanghai news correspondent as well, to go with being a state overage cricketer as well. He's going very, very well at the moment. Alistair Lynch, thanks for joining us on the Fox Footy podcast, and we look forward to seeing you across the Fox Footy screens for the rest of the year.
Yeah, absolute pleasure, fellas. Thanks.
Thank you very much to Alistair Lynch for joining us on the Fox Footy podcast. Would you be knocking on David Noble's door as well there, Tom Morris?
Yes, I think David Noble is a very, very impressive football person. Mm. He's done a great job at Brisbane. He's balanced. He's strong. He understands the game. The senior coach now, above all else, needs to be tactically adept, but they need to, above all, be a really strong man manager, and that's what Noble is.
I think the idea that he or Fagan could have had either role at the club is very interesting, because that's exactly what they could use at Carlton.
Interchangeable,
or alternatively, if you do get an untried assistant coach and you get a David Noble type, that will have so much support for the coach that it could work.
A good head of football working with a good senior coach, it's almost like co-coaches. Yeah. They combine roles to make a really strong top end of the footy department. Whereas when they work against each other, like I believe some clubs have in the past, when the senior coach is on a different page to the head of football, makes for a really awkward environment and culture.
You look at what he's done at Brisbane. They're going to play finals. 7-4, 80% of teams who are 7-4 under the top eight system play finals. They've got Carlton, St Kilda and Melbourne over the next 3 weeks, including the bye as well. They should make it. They can win a final if it's at the Gabba,
yeah,
for sure.
Be great for Brisbane. Now, speaking of strong gold content, it's now time for Australia's favourite segment on the Fox Footy podcast, Fair or Farce.
I've got it. I was hoping my key ring would make noise when I pulled the little dollar you
Max,
put in.
Max the fake
dollar that you put in, like at Woolworths to get your trolley.
Oh my God. Excellent. Fair or farce?
Didn't make a very good noise.
Mm.
Fair or farce, Benny Boy?
Yes.
We should scrap the score review system because it's imperfect.
Oh, no, farce. We can tweak it. We just need to put some more resources into it. I'm craving the bunker at the moment, Tom. I think that would help.
We're in the bunker right now.
I don't know if the three of us would make the best score reviewers of all time.
Get your sand wedge out. We're craving the bunker.
Oh, I heard Nick Riewoldt on SEN on Tuesday morning. They need a cricket-style checklist.
Go through the steps.
So that's going to take time, but if we want to take this seriously, we need to take time and we need to have a checklist like that.
Haven't we seen, I think Ralphie tweeted about it during the week, that the AFL trialled a bunker and the only problem was money. AFL's got plenty of money.
Well, you'd think so, given how much Fox Footy and Channel 7 are paying them. Mm.
I would like to think so. And so there's two schools of thought here. One is you need to refine it to make it actually work. The second, which weirdly I've come around to more, is that all replays, we're getting too specific. I can understand the viewpoint of when we're spending 3 minutes on did a finger brush the thing here, just go back to if it's clear and obvious, overturn it. If it's not, don't do it. We're actually hurting a lot of different sports. VR and soccer is obviously a big one.
VAR,
yes, yeah. Which is hurting that game. So there's two alternate viewpoints there. Yes.
Max, Geelong need to start lobbying now to play a home prelim at GMHBA, regardless of opponent, fair or farce?
Fair, because they could very well host GWS, and that would be one of the few teams that they could possibly host at a prelim, couldn't they?
Yeah, but let's say they're playing Collingwood in a prelim.
Then it's never going to happen.
No, but they should start lobbying for it, is my question.
And I'm sure they will, because they have every year over the last few years, even when they haven't looked like a real flag.
What does the stadium hold, GMHBA?
It's pushing sort of late 30s.
Yeah. To me, I'm a big believer that the grand final's an MCG venue, but now that GMHBA has sort of been redone, I would play a prelim there. I would. It doesn't matter who it's against. And I don't care if enough opposition supporters can't go. You are the home team. You get the advantage.
It would be a disadvantage to Geelong to play a prelim against Collingwood or Richmond at the MCG.
Oh, massive.
Absolutely. And you consider that GWS has hosted a prelim, even if it was against the Bulldogs, two lower drawing crowds. Geelong should be hosting home games at its home ground.
You know it's going to be a big story as we go towards the end of the season.
You know what the problem is? Before a game, so in the lead up to the finals, no team wants to put it on the agenda too much because they don't want to distract the fact from it's about winning the game.
It's like planning a victory parade.
That's right. And after they lose the game, they don't want to make it seem as if it's an excuse. So the story keeps going around without actually getting anywhere. Mm. You need a club to come out strongly and say, hang on, integrity of the competition is so important. Mm. We have a stadium that's perfectly able to hold enough supporters to make it viable for a prelim final, and therefore it should be at our home ground.
I do think the good thing that what the Cats have done this year is proven that they can win at the MCG.
That's also true.
So that if they're going to not be able to control where the game is played, at least control how you can play at those games.
Yes, Max. Benny Boy, fair or farce, the three staggered bye weeks is the wrong way to give players a rest during the season. Week one coming up now.
The wrong way to give players a rest. No, I think it's a farce.
So you like the three staggered bye weeks?
I don't love it, though.
So how's it a farce?
Are you asking from a sports science point of view?
Yeah. No. I'm asking from a... What's the best way to have byes in AFL?
I think my preference is that we have one weekend off for everyone. We can have a footy-free weekend. That's just my preference.
A club footy weekend.
Celebrating local club footy.
What I wouldn't mind as well is changing two byes, which the AFLPA has been pushing for a while, having one a third of the way through the season, another two-thirds of the way through, and in the first third break, having the AFLW Grand Final. Then you can extend that season out to that point, give that match a bigger stage. It solves a number of problems.
It does. That's very true, because it's particularly with an extra four teams coming into that competition next year as well.
You need to at some point move to having more home and away games. You can have an extended final series, give that game the spotlight it deserves. It'll get 40,000 if you have tickets free at the Adelaide Oval again.
Very interesting. Maxi Boy, Maxi Bon.
Yes.
Fair or farce, Freo is the most undervalued, underrated team of 2019.
Which end of the question are you going to eat first?
That's not fair.
I can see you've had your fair share of Maxi Bonds. I can hear you've had your fair share of Maxi Bonds.
Well, shirt is a little bit tight. So. I think that's probably fair. Brisbane would be the other alternative. But Freo, I said after round one, could make the finals.
He did, yes.
And then they went and proved me right by losing to Gold Coast.
They've been real. But they've, along with Hawthorn and the Bulldogs, this team has been really hard to read across the entire competition.
So the one thing is they have been consistent defensively. They have been very good defensively. That's where the Alex Pearce injury is going to actually have a huge factor, because he's in All-Australian contention now, but he's gone out with his injury for the season.
Bradley Hill's return has been outstanding. So now they've got a group of four genuine match winners in Hill, Walters, Fife, and Mundy's playing superb footy into his early 30s. So.
You look at the top nine, the teams who have a winning record or better. Adelaide, I think, is ninth, or Fremantle is ninth. It's based on percentage. Then with Port, I think that's the nine who can make the finals. Yep. Hawthorn maybe, but they haven't been able to string it together because they still haven't had a winning streak.
Nope.
And Essendon seems done.
Ben, fair or farce, GWS have a potential ruck crisis on their hands.
Yes, they do have a potential ruck crisis on their hands, Tom. So at the moment, they've got Shane Mumford as the number one man, but they see Dawson Simpson as a genuine backup ruckman. He's just there to fill a gap. So I know he had a really good patch towards the end of last season, where at one stage he was rated first in the comp over a month period for hitouts to advantage,
I think.
It was a bit bizarre. But at the moment, if Mumford goes down, I think they're in some strife. Dawson has to fill that role. Matthew Flynn's been on the list for 4 years and really... He's still developing. He's still got training wheels on.
Did they have a mid-season trade pick or not?
I think they had the option to make picks, but they chose not to.
Exactly. So why, if they have a ruck crisis, would you not go and pick a ruckman up from somewhere else?
Yeah, and they should have picked up a guy like Michael Knoll, who went to the Swans, and that was bizarre because Swans have an array of ruckmen and some good depth of ruckmen, and they've got Darcy Cameron and a couple other guys on the list, but they picked up the South Australia's number one ruckman.
He went earlier to the Swans, though. You think if he'd have dropped to them, would they have considered him?
I would have thought so. Would have made a lot of sense.
Two things on that. One is that Shane Mumford needs to stop giving away free kicks.
Oh, yes.
I understand that he's their physicality. He's
bullocking.
The whole point is that he intimidates people, but he's giving away 24 free kicks in 4 weeks. That's
six per week.
It's surely unacceptable. The second is AFL commentator Ben Waterworth. How was Giants Giants.
Giants
Stadium,
in capital letters.
All caps for the Suns and the Giants game, by the way. We even asked you.
So how many people do they say rocked up to the game?
7,000. I think less than in Shanghai.
I reckon there was less than 5,000 there.
Yeah. Really?
Honestly,
yeah.
That's what I thought. Now, it looked worse on the broadcast because most of the members were sitting on the broadcast side, so you wouldn't have seen...
Sort of like the AFLW games.
Yes, yeah, a lot like the AFL, particularly at GMHBA Stadium. It was a good experience.
It's a watch this space. And well called from you, Ben.
Well called to you, Tom.
Thank you, Ben.
Oh, yeah.
Slightly lower, probably similar crowd.
Under 18 superstar. Yeah.
Max, fair or fast, teams linking up arms after games over the last 2 weeks will make a considerable difference to society.
No, fast.
Okay.
Look, it's great. It's a great message. It's lovely to see. But the people who are footy fans who say racist things online are not going to be convinced by seeing players link arms.
So, and I'm not...
They have inbuilt...
Okay, I get that. So, and I'm not against linking arms, yeah. But why do it then?
Because why not?
Because I think for someone
who... It's lovely, and the players probably feel it's important to send a united message.
And I think for a young person who maybe hasn't been exposed to racism or is naive to it yet, and then they ask their parents, what's this all about? And then maybe that plants the seed for some education that's really needed.
Good answer.
It can't hurt.
Mm. It can't hurt. Ben, fair or fast, Richmond can't win the flag.
No, that's a fast. They still can win the flag. Cochin's only been back for 1 week, and they've still got Jack Riewoldt to come back. Kingy's asterisk is that he wants to see Richmond win a prelim without Alex Rance. Which I think is fair, but this system overcomes them. I think the system overcomes everything when it comes to the Tigers.
That's a funny asterisk. I'm waiting until they win a prelim to see if they can win the flag.
Yeah, that's
well, fair. Yeah, that'd be
because
the grand final.
That's his doubt.
There's a 50-50 chance.
I don't think anyone has any doubt that Richmond can make the finals and certainly have the potential to make the top four. But in a big game, without Alex Rance, can they do it? Mind you, Rance was pantsed in that prelim last year against Collingwood.
It was. I think a few players were that day, and the last one goes to you.
Yeah. They're not going to play a final at Marvel, so they'll be fine.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true. I'd like them to play a prelim at GMHBA. Anyway, Max, the last one goes to you.
Thank you.
Ken Hinckley to Carlton would be a good career move for him if Port misses the finals.
What does he want out of coaching Ken Hinckley? I think
security and a flag.
Well, I think he's closer to that at Port Adelaide than Carlton. So
security,
far.
Is he? If they miss the finals? Because if they miss the finals again the year after, he's probably out the door.
Well, then in that case, take the Carlton job because you wouldn't have a job otherwise. It's having a job or not.
Fair or farce?
Farce. I think it's better for him to stay at Port Adelaide, but I understand your point about security. I think that was one of the coaches we put under pressure at the start of the season.
Yeah.
David King did. Yes, if Port didn't make the finals. I think they've shown at this point that they are good enough to make it. It's whether they can get all their players fit, all their ducks in a row, and win the games because we saw them drop from 11-4 last year, which was a historic collapse.
To me, Ken Hinckley, if he misses the finals this year, is getting to a point of not too dissimilar to Brad Scott and Longmire to a different degree. Longmire's won a flag and taken him to another couple of grand finals. But sometimes you just reach a natural end. And I feel like after almost a decade in charge, Ken Hinckley would reach a natural end, maybe the end of 2020 or 2021. And that's probably when his contract, I think he signed a 5-year deal. It's not far away from finishing at that point.
What do you do if you're Port Adelaide and you win one final this year?
No, you keep pushing.
You keep pushing with Ken.
Yeah, you win a final. Yeah, you absolutely. Then you keep pushing.
I think that's their realistic goal at this point.
To answer your question earlier, I think Ken Hinckley is the perfect person for Carlton because I think he's I think he's a very, very good coach. I think he's well suited to a team that needs some direction. And I also think that he has a lot to offer to a group of players who haven't heard his voice before. And I think the value of a new, fresh voice cannot be underestimated for players who have heard similar voices for a couple of years.
Except Matthew Lobe, who's one of the only recent guys who's been traded from Port Adelaide to Carlton. So as we close up fair or fast, over the coming weeks, you're going to be doing a coaching pressure gauge for foxfooty.com.au.
Yeah, maybe a coaching performance gauge and a coaching pressure gauge. Look forward to that.
Yes, looking forward to that.
Do you think the worst person in terms of how they're feeling after the last 2 weeks is Alan Richardson?
Mm. Well, because he's next cab off the rank.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's not great.
Yeah. You know that song... where have you gone, Joe DiMaggio? The nation turned its lonely eyes to you. And I keep thinking that everyone's now turned their lonely eyes to Alan Richardson. Like they've gone North Melbourne, bang. Brennan Bolton, shots fired. Hello, Richo. How are you? And he's just standing there waiting to be thrown Darton.
It's probably the first time I think I've heard Tom sing with pitch.
So I heard
him, actually.
Immediately I knew what you were talking about. I just wanted you to keep singing.
Yeah. It wasn't bad from you, Tom. Well done.
That's all I've got.
Let's open up the weekly mailbag on Fox Footy Podcast, as we usually do, as Tom tries to find a
sound. No, see, that's not the sound of a mailbag, unless I'm getting rid of the
just
letters.
Just do the segment, thanks, pal.
I thought you were going to sing me an intro.
Come on, champ.
You were so... That's offensive. Do not champ me.
Sorry, I won't.
Jason Little writes in, first up, first cab off the rank. Should Ben Stratton's treatment of Charlie Cameron constitute a free kick? What does it say about the AFL when they're trying to ban fans for calling umpires names, yet nothing is said to an umpire who's standing there laughing while Stratton punches Charlie?
So I wasn't
Charlie.
Totally across this,
it was
Tom.
Pinching.
But yeah. It was,
and like little tiny gut punches and prokes and pods.
It should be prodding. A fine. I don't think it should be a free kick. It should be a fine.
So someone suggested well-worded phone call might be in the... But is that enough?
I'm sick of please explains and phone calls. Yeah. Make the call. And I would give him a fine for that sort of stuff. Because as an umpire, it's very hard to determine...
Are you saying the umpire or Stratton? Are you saying fine the umpire for not giving something?
No, wrong? No. I'm okay. I don't think the umpire should give it a free kick because it's so small, it's hard to determine exactly what the impact is. Yeah. But on replay, on video footage... In the cold light of day for Michael Christian, you'd say, no, this is inappropriate. I'm fining you $1,500. Don't do this.
I think it was just weak. I think it's a weak thing to do. I understand footy is a physical sport, but to do that to another person, I know that's niggling players and stuff like that. I hate it. Just in my soul, I hate it. And seeing someone like the Hawthorn captain doing it just says to me, like, if you can't win that battle... You have to resort to that.
Yeah, but plenty of good players have done that.
I know, but I hate it.
But then I look at I grew up watching Robert Harvey and really respecting Harvey, and I think Robert Harvey just played the game. He just played. He didn't worry about that sort of stuff. Yeah. And they're the players I love the most.
The players you respect.
They chase the footy and they play the game.
I lost a bit of respect for seeing Ben Stratton do that.
Did you? Wow, that's a headline.
No one cares about my opinion, but I just don't.
What's
like
the next mailbag?
Someone talking about the Brisbane Neefel side. They are playing very well, but I don't know that we'll talk about them on here.
I think they lost their first game on the weekend. They've got a percentage of 200.
Yeah, 238. They have some depth. They're going quite well this year, I've heard. Robbo, not the Robbo. What to do with St Kilda? Looking up emoji, sad emoji, angry emoji.
What do you mean, what to do with St Kilda?
So what do you do if you're St Kilda right now? Did they make a mistake taking Jaron Geary over to China for a start?
His leg injury probably had nothing to do
with... Well, it might have, because he didn't quite have the speed to get away from that tackle.
Yeah, so it might have been a physiological issue.
Maybe. No, I think if the captain says he's right to play, you play him,
okay.
By and large, and he's the captain. I think if a younger player says, I want to go to China, even though I've hurt my core, even though I've had surgery on my quad a few weeks ago, you probably don't. But I think you've got to back your captain, especially someone who's so well-liked internally at the Saints.
What about then, we mentioned Richo being a bit worried before... Should he be worried? Should they be considering looking at a new coach at this point?
Yes, absolutely.
What now?
What question? Should he be worried? Yes.
Should he be worried?
Should they start considering looking at a new coach?
I'm not saying should they sack him in the next 2 weeks.
No. Richo's got a problem because he's out of contract unless they win a final.
And they're not winning a final.
They're probably not even making the finals. Mm. They're almost certainly not making the finals. Even though they're, what are they, 5-6?
Yeah, but their percentage is 87.
Yeah, so... Richo's got a problem. He would be aware of it. He's very much a realist. He's got two people below him, Brendan Lade and Brett Ratten, who are very highly rated that can take over at any time.
Well, credentialed.
Yeah, it's a serious problem for Richo. It's unfair in a way because he is the definition of a coach who took on a club that was at the absolute bottom of a rebuild.
Mm.
They finished last in his first year and they were right at the bottom. They had a plan. The road to 2019, we've spoken about that.
Yep.
2019, they were meant to challenge for a flag. In 2018, they were meant to make finals. Neither are going to occur. That's not just Richo's fault, but just like Brendan Bolton, the buck has to stop with the senior coach.
Even before this week, I would have sacked Richo before I would have sacked Bolton.
Because
to me...
At 5-5.
Because to me, St Kilda is at the point where, even before that, I didn't think they were going to make finals. So certainly given that result doesn't help that. But at this point, they are entering the dip where they're going to have to start rebuilding.
Really?
Whereas Carlton's still there. Like, is St Kilda's next premiership team, is the core of that on its list right now?
Well, we don't know. We didn't think that about the Bulldogs or Tigers. Tigers we probably did. Bulldogs we didn't think that.
No, but the Bulldogs at least made the finals the year before that.
They did. I think St Kilda's still got enough young talent if they get a few of the injured guys back to be a reasonable chance of playing finals next year with the right coach. There's a lot of ifs.
They're not a threat to win the flag, though.
No. They're not.
They're a ways away from it for me.
Yeah, they haven't been a threat to win the flag since 2010.
I know. Yeah. 11 and stuff, but that's my point. I think they're going into that decline phase, which is my concern for them.
Yes.
Someone wanting some praise for Cam Zerha, Mark Hirkmans.
Yeah, he was excellent on Friday night, wasn't he?
Is he strong?
Did he compare? Did that question air compare him to Jordan Degoe?
Yes, similar size, and it would be interesting to compare the stats of the two after 17 games. I haven't done that, of course.
Degoe had a very slow start to his career. He's only really come on last year, really, and he was drafted in 2014.
So. Strong legs are the key. Strong quads. Wiggle your hips just like Gary Ablett did for a decade.
A lot like you, Tom.
A lot like me. A strong bum.
Yep, and a lot like you, Tom.
These powerful players are the way to go. They're great because the game is so in tight now. It's not just enough to be quick. You've actually got to be powerful and explosive.
Yeah, and I think he's probably in the right group there at North Melbourne. There's a lot of powerfully built North Melbourne players there. Zerha was nowhere near regarded in the same ilk as Degoe was when they were in their respective 18th years. So he's a bit of a bolter, actually, for the Roos. It's looming as a bit of a bargain pick.
David S. Malineau asks, Luke Beveridge, will he survive the season? 11-11 in 2017, 8 wins in 2018, and 4 wins this year.
Yeah, are the dogs going under the radar there in this capacity in their underperforming?
They are young, and they could have won 2 or 3 more games, just like Carlton could have won 2 or 3 more games. But Luke Beveridge has runs on the board because he's won a flag, but that doesn't last forever.
How many years does a flag at the Bulldogs buy you? Four or five?
No, it buys you till the end of this year, and then if they have a similar sort of year next year to what they are this year, then he's under absolute pressure for his job.
I don't think you can sack him this year. I think that's unfair because I think they've shown enough this year to think that they could challenge for the finals. Yeah. I thought they could this year a couple of weeks ago.
Let's see who they pick up with Tom Boyd's money.
Last one, I think, from the mailbag there, Maxie.
Juan asks,
Juan,
will there ever be a boy born that can swim faster than a shark?
Can he ever be a boy born that can swim faster than the shark?
I don't know how fast sharks swim.
I highly doubt it, to be honest.
I mean, not at birth. Maybe later.
Thank you, Juan, for your contribution.
I got a joke for you, Ben. Can I finish with a joke?
Yeah, yeah.
Two cows are standing in a paddock, and one cow says to the other, "Geez, you'd hate to have mad cow disease, wouldn't you?" And the other cow says, "What do I know? I'm a horse."
Thomas!
Sorry, everyone.
Are we still recording?
Dragged the podcast down to this level.
How are we going to wrap this one up?
We're going to go with the round 12 tips and cups.
It's a long podcast today.
Just,
I like this.
Just six games this week with six teams having the bye. So Essendon, Frio, Hawthorn, Port Adelaide, St Kilda and the Western Bulldogs can put the feet up this weekend.
I reckon all of them can beat the bye too, so good week for them.
There was a YouTube clip about Melbourne beating the bye about that. 6 years ago.
I do remember that. That was quite good. So Richmond and Geelong, huge game Friday night to kick us off for the Oren Stephenson Cup.
Oh, gosh.
Geelong.
I think if you're tipping Richmond in this game, you have views of Geelong that date back to before this season.
Yeah.
You are thinking of the Geelong side that could not win at the MCG.
And if you're tipping Richmond, you're chasing tips and you're taking too big a risk.
Hey, you're going okay with tipping.
I had a bad week on the week. I should have got sticks. I tipped Carlton, which is stupid.
You fool. And then you called for the coach to sack you. I can't believe you. You hate them so much.
But I'm going okay.
Speaking of Carlton, they're hosting the Brisbane Lions on Saturday under David Teague, but this is for the Richard Hadley Cup, 2003 Premiership play.
The other person who would have hated Carlton sacking Brendan Bolton was Chris Fagan because... Now they're going to get the reshore effect, right?
Yes.
That's what always happens. Yeah.
Brisbane people were tweeting me on Sunday night saying, please stop having a go at Carlton. They're playing us this week.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The big Brisbane fan in our office, Anth, was saying the same Blitz. Thing.
I'm tipping Carlton here.
The Blues?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
I am.
Brisbane can make the finals. Carlton is 1-10.
It's at Marvel, and I still believe...
Marvel isn't the moon.
I still believe Carlton... Just like I thought last weekend, are going to find a win or two elsewhere this year, and I think this is one of those games.
I don't think this is one of those games. I agree with you in concept, though.
The way Brisbane started against Hawthorn was poor.
They've been a poor starter all year.
The Gold Coast Suns host North Melbourne for the Daniel Curry Cup.
This is a good game.
I feel like he was a really big super coach pickup.
Not an easy game to tip this one.
So you got a feeling about the Suns here? I feel like the Suns has hit a bit of a mini tipping point on... Saturday, but they did come up against arguably the form team in the competition.
Yeah, being in the North Melbourne rooms after the game when they were playing a song, a John Denver song.
John Denver song?
Yeah, Country Road, take me home to the place where I belong. Mount Virginia. West
Virginia. Mountain Mama.
That one.
Take me home.
Yeah.
Country Roads.
That one. Yeah, they were playing that song. And I thought the vibe was great. So I'm going North Melbourne here. I think their culture is pretty good at the moment, which
is weird. Playing Fallout or something. Gold Coast, three really good quarters against Geelong, then fell off a cliff. Two really good quarters against GWS,
fell off a cliff.
I want to see them do it in a full game, but I think North, honestly, they win this. They can challenge for finals.
Hang on.
Just.
Challenge for finals.
They can. Just. We'll look at the stats.
Mathematically.
They'll be 5-7. Mm. They've got enough winnable games. They have to win probably the next three, but they're in the mix if they beat Gold Coast.
Moving on to Saturday night's game. It'll see this hopefully should be a good game.
Yes.
Adelaide hosting the GWS Giants.
Tough game to tip.
For the Kirtley Hampton Cup.
Is this a round one replay?
Yes. Yes.
Are you thinking of the round one game of 2017 when Adelaide blitzed the Giants and announced themselves as contenders?
Yeah, maybe.
My mind always goes back to that game.
Not round one, but they've already played. Have they already played this year? Pretty sure that. There's so many games.
I'll go back and look. I'm going to say the Giants. I think they are in quite good form right now, although I am worried about the split between them at Giants Stadium and on the road.
Max is in some serious
Their percentage at Giants Stadium is like 250.
Can you explain why you say it like that?
It's all caps. All of their branding is all caps.
Which is grammatically incorrect.
And it's stupid, and it means I have to yell them. Right,
I do like the Giants.
They're at 100% percentage every other ground. So they're an average team anyway, but Giants Stadium.
How would you say it if they had an exclamation mark at the end of every word?
Giants!
Or maybe you need to work on an accent as well, maybe.
I don't know who I'm tipping in that one, Ben. I need to reserve my judgment.
Well, those tips will come out on Thursday on foxfooty.com.au. Sydney and West Coast. For the Jason Ball Cup.
Traditional rivals.
Yes, traditional rivals. Jason Ball won a premiership at both of these clubs, actually.
I'm tipping the West Coast Eagles. I'm just saying to Hum, Andrew Gaff's playing some good footy because he's actually hitting his targets now and his ball use is a lot better. Exactly the same numbers as he's had in the first half of the year, but he's now actually doing it more with it.
Eagles for you, Maxie?
Adelaide and GWS have not played this year.
Oh, right. Okay. We were thinking of 2017 then.
I really liked West Coast's second half against the Dogs. I know it was only, quote-unquote, the Bulldogs, but Darling and Kennedy looked really good. Waterman kicked three goals in about 10 minutes. Their offense was as good as I've seen it this year.
And so then the round finishes, as it usually does, around on the Queen's birthday weekend with the Pies and the Demons at the MCG for the Shane Woden Cup.
Oh.
Why do you have to do that?
Surely a Shane Woden
What a man.
I lost it when Shane Woden went to
Two Collingwood. Votes, Shane Woden, Melbourne. I remember Wayne Jackson calling that out.
Where does that night rank among the nights in your lifetime?
When you won a Brownlow?
As a Melbourne supporter.
Yeah, very high.
Very high.
Because I was eating party pies with my dad and one of his friends. And now,
Tim Morris.
Looking back on it now, they were having quite a few drinks. Yeah. And I didn't quite realise given I was nine, but it was a terrific night for Melbourne supporters. No, Collingwood will win this, Ben.
I agree. One of my favourite parts of On The Source each week is that Tom is becoming more and more central to the editions of On The Source.
Yeah.
You telling the guys, how old were you guys in 1993? And then you look down the barrel. I was two.
What I will say about On The Source, I'm on the couch for somewhere between 3 and 6 minutes every week, but I'm on The Source for 60% of the On The Source clips.
What does it say about your alcohol consumption as well there, Tom?
Oh, jeez.
Accurate.
I blame the algorithm.
You're very, very good stuff from you, Thomas. Always on The Source and on the Fox Footy podcast. Make sure you keep clicking back to foxfooty.com.au.